Accession number 16663, reel 5.
Mrs. Kimura, reel 5. I think that you came across the Tartars in whilst you were in this place near Gorky.
Yes, Darovatka. Yes, there was... Can I start?
Please.
Yes. At the time when we died off and we were too small force to do anything about building further on the railway line, and apparently it was of some importance to the authorities, they brought a brigade of Tatars. Tatars were Stakhanovtsi, so-called.
Stakhanovites.
Stakhanovites in Stakhanovtsi. They were all rather large, well-muscled men, and they could sometimes make demands, not on political police, because they at the time had nothing to do with political police. They were sort of private citizens, but on the authorities, like boots, when they were going into the work in the mud or something like that. But the story goes that those Tatars in late 20s or early 30s were brought to the woods, to those woods, when still kolkhozes were even further on, were not organized them at the time we were there, in the middle of the winter time, in January or February, when the minus 40 centigrade is a rather a normal thing, 35, 30, 40, about 5,000 of Tatars, men, women, children, old people, dropped in the clearing with one soul, with one, again, I never can remember the name for chopping the wood.
Axe. Yeah.
With one axe and left there. Apparently, there was cannibalism. And only very few, less than 20 survived. Political police came in the springtime to have a look how many survived, and very few did. That is the Tatar story. Although it is, I didn't, of course, witness this. That was told me to me. The story, the other story, about Russians. There was a young boy, I think it is from many aspects interesting story. There was a young boy who was roughly our age. Apparently, he must be show some good progress in school because he was taken after 4 years to the kind of a communist boarding school. But after 10 years, which is the span of the education lower and the middle, in Russia was rather, he wasn't, let's say, clever enough to be sent anywhere else, so he sent as a deputy to our master of the technical master Russia, the presidential of the railway one. As being, as I mentioned previously, young girls from school brigade, he somehow could not pass us without saying something to us. So he would come and say, "So you Poles, you do all believe in God?" We said, "Veshka, don't be silly. Some do, some don't." "You never heard about Darwin?" "Veshka, everybody heard about Darwin. And clever people do not believe in God. Professors of university, is that for you clever men?" "Yes." "Some believe, some don't." So, Bazov, sort of thing. Next time he would come and say, "If you so believe in God, why doesn't he drop you bread?" Bread being synonym for life in Russia. So we said, "You silly clod." Then the next thing, I suppose he was trying this time to shock us. And he said, "You know what? When I came back for holidays from my school and I saw that my mother hidden icona under her clothing, I let know who ought to know about that." meaning Communist Party. And we said, Vashka, you are worse than animal. Animals are loyal to family, and you are boasting about this? If any of us drunk or, I don't know, under some influence, have done things like that, never would be able to boast about it. It would be like a stone hanging on us. And you are boasting. That was one part of the story. Then, after our being set free, but we had to stay. It was nice to know that there is somebody who thinks of us, but practically our life didn't change and our hope had no reason to rise so much. And at that time, here Vashka comes again, very pensive, and says, oh, and after all, God gave you bread. So we said, Vashka, what are you talking about? Where is this bread? Never you mind. If you are set free, if you have somebody who thinks of us, you will get bread. Again, bread was synonym for freedom as well. And that was the boy brought up in communist school. That is only as a matter of pondering.
What was the name of the camp that you were at?
Darovatka.
Darovatka.
Darovatka. Darovatka. Putin, I am sure he is dead. He became the meat of the guns or whatever. Anything else? Some horror story?
Tell me if there's anything that you remember.
Yes. There were sort of thermoses made out of the birch tree. Double skin set in double wooden top and pliable, so you could put your top sideways and then straightened it, and because the top was slightly narrower, it would hold on. And those thermoses were really much better than factory made. That was local. Those things were made for the purpose of keeping kipiatok, that boiled water, that amenity of Russia. And on the way, in the train, on the way south, you know, when we were free, I went to fetch this kipiatok, and as soon, and our perch was top one, so as soon as I managed to climb there, and before I managed to really well sit, the train rapidly moved. I changed position of my hand, and this kipiatok, this boiling water, all went on my legs, on both sides, outside of my tights. Of course, there was huge burn. There was not a scratch, not a of the anything to be put on it. Lysis had a nice background to walk on it. But, and I had a huge two wounds on both sides here. But we came, I think, to Sverdlovsk. That is the larger town in, near Ural. And there was a huge sign, Red Cross. So I went there in hope that they will give something, some kind of, you know, dressing to my wounds by the time about 1 week old or more. They gave me not large enough squares of gauze to cover my wound. And that was that. But when I was approaching this place, there was a youngish man, although age was extremely difficult thing to tell among the starved people, but it he looked like, who was forcing his way into this Red Cross office, forcing, being thrown away, and again forcing. The sight was common enough, nobody really paid that much attention, but by the time I waited in my queue for this little squares of of girls. I went out. By the time I went one, this man lied dead. He died of starvation. And somebody, Paul as well, said, well, he might have some documents. Let us know at least who is he. And he picked up a kind of wallet. And being himself from Silesia, he said immediately, that is the son of our wealthiest mine owner in our district. We were already in Guzar at the end of our journey. I mean journey south to the Polish, well, inverted bracket, but nevertheless. And we were left one night in the railway station, inside the railway station. We never noticed that we were sitting just below the cash, little cash window. And there were really little over there. It didn't matter at the moment. But next to us was somebody in position precisely like us, and man, but he was sort of leaning, all the time leaning towards us, towards my sister, actually, the younger sister. So my mother said to him, Mister, I know we have license, you have license, because everybody had, but let our license not mix. Nobody wants to have typhoid, new typhoid. Yes? So let us separate a little bit. He wouldn't listen. So eventually, as tight as it was there, we managed to, you know, to push ourselves a little bit further from him. And here he was lying, dead body, under this box window, you know, ticket. At that time, Russian had to have very special permission, being wartime, to travel. And nevertheless, to get ticket was rather an ordeal. It wasn't an easy thing. So in the morning, when the station was opened and this window, the box window was open, Russians started to push themselves, hands and a little bit of bribery money in it as well, to get tickets, which were, you know, they needed. Nobody ever paid the slightest attention to this dead body. It was a very convenient step to be higher up, to push your hand quicker through this box window. This is another Russian story.
So they stepped on the body?
Yeah. It was a convenient step. And Russians.
Was he a Russian?
I don't know.